This is Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Thank you for joining us here on this very special program today. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm your host, Richard Dugan, and I come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. You'll be able to hear this and all the other interviews that we've done over the nearly 3 years we've been doing this program. Today is a very special day for me because today is my birthday, and it's a big day because I've made it to the half-century mark. Even though I don't feel it, I still feel only 17. I'm very excited about all of this because I get to share this day with Greg Braden, my guest. He's been on the program many times before. Today, we're going to be talking about his latest book, Fractal Time, and we're going to be demystifying the mysteries, if you will, of 2012. Greg, it is great to have you back on the program again. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Richard. I'm thrilled to be on the program. It's good to hear your voice, and I'm really excited about this the material that we're going to be able to cover with our audience today. So thank you for having me back.
Now, as we speak, there have been a movie or two that have come out about 2012. Actually is a rather momentous and monumental day. I mean, after all, it is my anniversary. My wife's and my anniversary is on the solstice. It's on the 21st of December. So obviously there's some, the Mayans knew something.
I did not know that, so the whole world will be anticipating your anniversary.
And I better do it up big. It's 10 years.
Yep. Well, some of the world will be celebrating, and some of the world will be just waiting.
That's right.
Now, Richard, now, yes. Wait a minute. What if the fate of the entire planet rests upon how you live your anniversary?
Then, like
maybe
I said,
that's what this is telling us.
There's a movie in here somewhere. I'm waiting for Hollywood to call.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. It is a lot of, well, I have to say that one of the things that we try to maintain on this program is a certain level of sanity as well as humor, and that we don't want to take a lot of this stuff so seriously that we forget to live our lives and be joyous about being here and being around the people that we're with.
Absolutely, and I think that's, we say this in every live program I do. If you spend your time waiting for some event to happen that someone has predicted or prophesized, or someone has instilled a fear into us about those events, if we spend our lives waiting for those things to happen, we miss life.
Miss
the everyday events that make life what it is. But the reality is, the way we live those moments in everyday life actually prepare us for whatever eventuality is going to come in those future events. It's how we treat one another and how we treat ourselves and how much honesty we choose to acknowledge the things that are happening in our lives, and then how we deal with that honesty.
Mm-hmm. They're really
not separate at all.
No, they're not.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Greg Braden, author of Fractal Time, and we're going to continue our conversation with Greg here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, here on this very special day for me, and I hope that you will share it with me in this hour anyway, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Don't go away. How much do you understand about 2012 and December 21st? Well, it's going to be a special day for me regardless. I hope that you'll stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I am Richard Dugan, your host. My guest today is Greg Braden. We're talking about his latest book, Fractal Time.
Now, as we speak, there have been a movie or two that have come out about 2012. There are people on lecture circuits. There are people on... and I'm going to put it this way, Greg, on fear-mongering tours, generating a lot of energy over the negative aspects, and I'm going to say the potential negative aspects of December 21st, 2012, according to most people are aware, the Mayan calendar. But you come at it from a little different perspective, especially through your book, Fractal Time, and demystifying this date in history. First of all, is this the first time in human history that this kind of a monumental date has come up in anybody's calendar, Mayan or otherwise?
Well, absolutely not, Richard. And you've just covered a lot of ground in three short sentences. So I'd like to address those right off. First of all, I'm going to say no one knows for certain what's going to happen on December 21st of the year 2012. Secondly, I can say from a scientific perspective, I was trained as a scientist, and my passion for the bulk of my adult life has been to understand the uniqueness of our time in history and where it fits into the big picture, the history of our planet and our civilization. And what I can say to our listeners is that there's absolutely no scientific evidence right now to suggest that this 2012 cycle will be any different than the 2012 cycles of the past. And that leads us to the third point. It is a fact for listeners that may not be familiar with the topic that we're speaking about right now. It is a fact that we, our time in history, this generation, we are living the last years of a rare and mysterious cycle of time, a 5,125 excuse me, year-long cycle that our indigenous ancestors in Mesoamerica called a Great World Age. And it is a fact that we have lived at least four Great World Ages in the past that have been documented. And it is a fact that each time a world age comes to a close, there are events, catastrophic events, that that wreak havoc on the civilizations and the people of the Earth. But the aside here is that the events that are described orally in the oral traditions and what we see in the geologic record and in the historical record are the events that we're already living right now. We're already living the most frightening of the events that have been prophesied and predicted in these traditions. We're already living the extremes and the climate, the superstorms that are wiping entire communities off of shoreside areas. We're already living multiple fires raging out of control on multiple continents and diseases that are killing millions of people with no medical cure. Major magnitude earthquakes in multiple places in tight periods of time. And as we speak today, this is the day that the quake was occurring in South America off the coast of Chile.
An 8.8.
8.8. That was a major magnitude quake, and the aftershocks are around 7.8. So we're already living. This is important. And as I've traveled the world, the audiences of the world in the last 5 years, not just the United States, and I've shared this information, I think there is some degree of comfort knowing that we're already living and dealing with the crises that so many of these fear-mongers, as you described, are interpreting from the prophecies and the predictions, whether we're talking about Gene Dixon or Nostradamus or Edgar Cayce or the Hopi or the Tibetans or the Andean peoples. They all knew something was up for this period in time, because they lived through it in their periods of time, our indigenous ancestors. But if we look clearly, what they said is that it's the way we deal among ourselves with the crises that are going to determine how we experience the outcome. Clearly, it's not the end of the world. It's the end of a great world age. And by definition, that means it's the beginning of whatever comes next. So we could just as easily be very very excited talking about the beginning of the sixth world age, the beginning of a new world age cycle. But unfortunately, as they say in the media business, the beginning of things doesn't seem to sell. It's the end. The end times is what sells. So when we're looking at these cycles, these catastrophic events of the past, what I think it's important, one of the things that's really important to understand is that what's driving the cycles at the cosmic level are the alignments and the movements of planets and star systems, solar systems, galaxies. I mean, these are huge systems, Richard, that move slowly over long periods of time. So the triggers do not happen in a moment of a day. So the day, the alignment of December 21st of the year 2012, the winter solstice, is the day that the ancient Mayans chose as an astronomical event to mark the end of a great world age cycle. But what the mathematicians tell us and the astronomers is that we began moving into the zone of this 2012 alignment right around the year 1980, and that we complete this zone, we exit the zone right around the year 2016. And what that means is where we are right now is over halfway through and well into the changes that are associated with this kind of a closure of a cycle. And again, I think this is the good news. Rather than waiting and anticipating and fearing something that is yet to happen a couple of years down the road, if we can realize and acknowledge that we're already living those changes, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of dealing with them, and there's a lot of good things happening in the world as well. It's not all about these frightening images. So the last piece of this, the reason this is so important and why I'm so passionate about this, is our own scientists now are saying there's a growing body of scientific evidence suggesting that the images that we surround ourselves with in our daily lives quickly become the reality of our everyday world. So when we surround ourselves, when we're inundated with documentaries and very authoritative cable television specials and Hollywood blockbuster movies, all portraying a frightening demise to Earth and our civilization in just a couple of short years, are we only entertaining ourselves, or are we actually programming our response to the very things that we hope to avoid? And this is why it's so important that programs like this, Richard, this is why it's so important that we have alternative images, alternative expectations based on fact to go along with those frightening images, because the evidence is suggesting that none of those frightening images ever need to pass.
Well, Greg, let me ask you how this book, Fractal Time, came about. How did you decide that it was time to write this book?
Well, the title of our program is Tell Me Your Story, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so I'm going to tell my story. I was an engineer actually working in the defense industry in the last years of the Cold War when I first began hearing about the year 2012. And during that time, something that was coming sooner was the harmonic convergence that many people probably remember about. And I was trained as a scientist, my degrees in geology and the earth sciences, and I remember thinking, what's the big deal about 2012? I mean, why that year? Why not 2010 or 2020? You know, why so specifically about 2012? And I remember asking myself the question, what could possibly be known by our indigenous ancestors that we may have forgotten or that we're only beginning to understand today? And the answer to that question led me on a journey, Richard, that continues to this day into some of the most isolated, remote, magnificent, beautiful, pristine places remaining on the earth today, monasteries in the highlands of central China and the Tibetan Plateau, in the mountains of Egypt, the monasteries in the mountains of Bolivia and Peru and the southern Andes, the indigenous peoples all through the desert southwest and Australia and Africa. And what I began to understand very quickly was the only way I would ever understand, that I could understand, the mystery of 2012 was to understand cycles of time and how our lives and how our world changes on a cyclic basis. Cycles within cycles within cycles, nested cycles. And almost universally, our indigenous ancestors have always seen our world and our lives in terms of repeating events. Cycles, some of them are very short-term cycles that we can see, like the cycles of day and night, or the 28-day cycles of a moon and the way they affect a woman's body. We can see those readily, but the cycles our ancestors were looking at, some of them were hundreds and thousands of years long, where no one living at the end of the cycle would be the one that started to study at the beginning of the cycle. And one of my questions was, you know, how in the world did they even know? And there's probably a whole program we could do on that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. I don't know whether they were informed by, some would speculate, alien beings, or their intuition and their higher consciousness, as we get into sometimes. Or if they found a message in a bottle somewhere.
Well, absolutely. But the point is, they knew and understood cyclic relationships in nature, in our lives, in our world, and in our universe that our own science only began to confirm in the late 20th century with GPS and satellites and computers. And so my question was, if they knew that, what else could they have possibly known that we're only beginning to recognize or beginning to understand?
Well, it seems a little bit surprising to me, Greg, that our scientists are very well aware of the cycles of on the cellular level, the cycles of human beings, the cycles of nature on this planet. I mean, couldn't a logical, theoretical progression be made for the cycles of the universe? I mean, doesn't that just stand to reason, logically?
It does to you and I, and to our male-dominated, schematically-oriented, technological left-brain society. And there's no judgment there. It's just the path we've chosen.
Right. I like that. That's succinct.
But, yeah, we have been conditioned to see life in our world in a linear fashion, that things begin at one place, they progress and move forward with what physicists call the forward arrow or the forward march of time. And we tend to see things in a linear fashion, including the rise and fall of civilization and what we learn within a civilization. That's Western science. However, what I very quickly discovered is that we're in a minority with the rest of the indigenous world. They've always seen our lives as part of, rather than separate from, the cycles of the universe, and the cycles are all related. So whether we're talking about thousands of year-long cycles of star systems moving through the heavens, or the rise and fall of tribal civilizations on the Earth, and the weather patterns and climate and our ability to grow food and rise and fall of animal populations and all of that, they always saw them as intimately related. And this is where it behooves us, I believe, and from my perspective of a scientist, where it behooves us to look at the past and honor the wisdom of those who have come before us, and marry it with the best science of today to arrive at a wisdom, perhaps, that is greater than the understandings of the past or the science of today by themselves. If we marry these two great ways of knowing together, the spiritual and the indigenous traditions of our past and the science and the technology of today, if we marry them into a greater wisdom that incorporates elements of both, where does that lead us and how does that empower us to meet the unprecedented challenges that we're being faced with today? That the best minds of our time tell us that we're in uncharted territory right now. We've never have so many people been faced with so many different challenges, each challenge of such magnitude that it, if left unchecked, it could forever end civilization and life as we know it. Never have we had to deal with so many of those compressed into such a small window of time. So because we are in this uncharted territory, my question in the 80s as a scientist was, what would happen if we married the two great ways of knowing, the spiritual traditions of our past that tell us about life, and the science that tells us the nuts and bolts of why things are the way they are? If we can merge those into a greater wisdom, maybe we would give ourselves the tools that would help us to fare better at our end of age cycle that we're living now than the civilizations of the past. And this brings me to the last point that I wanted to make as we're going into the conversation here, because our own science now, our own history is showing that some of the greatest civilizations known to have existed on the history of the Earth buckled and collapsed and disappeared when they reached the point in their cycle where we find ourselves in ours today, because they made a mistake then that we still have time to avoid today. And the mistake is simply this: when the world changed on a cyclic basis, as it does time and time again, and they didn't understand exactly what those changes meant to them, in their fear, they began to compete with one another. They fought one another, and they fought to sustain an unsustainable way of life. They fought over disappearing resources, and when they fought, everybody lost. Nobody won, and those civilizations disappeared. And it's amazing how many of them are right on the 5,000-year mark that's the beginning of our cycle and the end of the last one, and the 10,000-year mark that was two cycles ago, where our modern archaeology is only beginning to acknowledge the existence of these advanced civilizations 10,000 years ago. We're talking about pre-Ice Age civilizations. So there's a whole conversation we could have there, but the question is, are we making the same mistakes today? And if we are, we've got time to recognize that and embrace a greater possibility.
Well, obviously, human history continued on past those cataclysmic events at the 5 and 10 and 15 and 20,000-year points of those civilizations. So that means that there are people who, if, let's just say, for the sake of argument, we make the same mistake again, that there still will be people who will survive to carry on the human race. Is that is that a fair assessment on the dark side, if you will?
I think it is, Richard. First of all, the fact that our ancestors wrote to us tells us that these cycles are not the end of the world, as many people are suggesting. I've seen very authoritative, well-recognized personalities on some of these media specials look right into the camera and say to us, we may be looking at the end of the world. I guess I know where they're coming from. The evidence doesn't support it. The fact that our ancestors lived through these experiences, and they did what humans always do. They did what this program is about right now. They wanted to share their story, and they began writing to us immediately after they had their experiences, and they dedicated entire temple complexes. They wrote entire texts and libraries and in ways of life that are preserved in these monasteries today, practices that they said would help us to get through these changes. They told us what it meant to them, and they offered us internal experiences to help us deal with the changes in our outer world. And those understandings, and the first of these cycles, I'm just going to back up, the cycle that we're talking about right now, our present cycle, it actually began in the biblical age in the year 3114 B.C., ends 2012 A.D.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the inner experiences in 3114 B.C., what those experiences meant to those people, and the way they documented and recorded them and passed them on, that became the seed or the kernel, if you will, of our most cherished spiritual traditions. And it was later that human intervention wrapped religion around those spiritual kernels. So the religion is a human artifact that is wrapped around the essence of a deeper teaching, and the teachings were designed to help us find our way to keep our center, to keep our sanity, if you will, and maintain ourselves, our balance.
So
the world around us is going through these changes.
If you have just joined us, this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm your host, Richard Dugan. My guest is Greg Braden. His latest work is Fractal Time, The Secret of 2012 and a New World Age. Okay, so let me see if I'm understanding correctly. My first 15 years in broadcasting, I worked within the confines, if you will, freely, I might add, of a Christian radio station. And of course, the basic historical teaching is that the Earth and humankind has only been here for 6,000 years. And putting that together with what you've just said, it sounds to me like the peoples who went through the last 5,000-year cycle before ours, basically, the people who were left were saying, we've got to put something in place that will prepare the humans that will be here in 5,000 years for this transition, this crossing over into a new world age, as you've described it, so that they don't make the mistakes that our people just made. And so that whole 6,000-year concept that, as you just stated, was wrapped, religion was now wrapped around it, is where they came up with the whole concept that man's only been here for 6,000 years.
Well, you've just hit on a couple of really very powerful ideas here, and one is the idea that is actually shaking the foundation of academia right now. It's so interesting. At the end of this cycle, not only are we learning to change the way we live, but we're also redefining who we are in the world, how long we've been on this planet, what our origins are, and what we have accomplished in the past. All of that is being redefined right now, and it is careers are being destroyed in some instances due to the reluctance of and the willingness to embrace the new evidence. But it appears that the 6,000 years, and it's not just the in some of the Christian traditions, but it is in some of the other religious traditions of the world.
Right.
Interpreting ancient texts as saying the earth is 6,000 years old, what I believe that they're showing is that that is not the length of time we've been on the planet. That is the length of time we've been here during the last cycle. They're telling the history of us beginning again at the end of the previous cycle and the beginning of this cycle, because so much was lost. And the archaeological level, this is where it gets the science comes in. Once I began to understand the nature of cycles, what became clear to me is that whatever is driving this end of cycle or world age phenomenon has probably happened before. And for our listeners that may not be familiar with this, it's fascinating to me, because if you want to know the big picture, it's actually what's driving these cycles is Earth's position in space. As we orbit the center of our Milky Way galaxy, the center of our galaxy is a very powerful source of energy. It's a huge magnetic field, essentially, is what it is. And where we are in our orbit around that source of energy, and the position of our planet, the tilt and the wobble, and there's something that's called obliquity.
Mm-hmm.
All of these factors, the bottom line is our position in space determines how we experience these cycles and when they occur. And apparently our ancestors knew this, and as I've gone through the creation stories to understand what they were telling us, it made sense that this information would also be in the physical record of the past. So as a geologist, I began looking at the places where you would find that kind of information, like the ice cores of Antarctica in Greenland, for example, where every year there's a new layer of ice that's preserved that captures dust particles, pollen grains, little bubbles of atmosphere that contain the carbon dioxide and the oxygen content, all these kinds of things. And from these, we can now interpret from these physical remains in the ice. We can tell whether the sea levels were high or low. We can infer what the temperatures were. We can tell how strong the magnetic fields of the Earth were. We can tell how much radiant energy from the sun was reaching the Earth. All of these we can get from these ice layers. So in 1999, the scientists of the Earth, although there were a lot of things they didn't agree with or agree upon, they were in agreement that Earth is warming, and they said as Earth warms, we're losing this record of our past in the ice caps of the planet. So if we're going to capture this record, we better do it now. And they drilled to the bottom of the Antarctic ice sheet in a place called Vostok Lake. No one knew for sure how many layers of Earth's history would be captured when they drilled to the bottom of the ice. And I think to the amazement of even some of the scientists who knew there was a lot of information there, what they captured, Richard, this is mind-boggling, they captured 480,000 layers of ice in the cores down through the Antarctic ice sheet, which means we have 480,000 years of Earth's history that we now can compare to where we are today to know if we are, in fact, living an anomalous time, or if what we're living now is what happens every time we go through a 2012, 5,125-year kind of cycle. And the bottom line is that's the latter. What we're experiencing now on Earth, it looks strange to us because it's changed so much in the last 150 or 200 years. But when you step back and you look at the big picture, the parameters now are where we always are when we reach this point in the cycle. The sea levels always rise. The ice always melts. The atmosphere always warms. The magnetic fields always decline. More energy from the sun reaches the Earth that's driving these. But where this gets really, really important in this conversation, and I think this is the key to help us understand what's happening here, is that the changes are intense, and we certainly are living an intense time in the history of our planet and our civilization, but they, in the past, in the historic record, they're short-lived. So the warming, for example, doesn't go on for generation after generation. It peaks, and then it begins to move in the opposite direction, which is what a lot of scientists are saying is actually happening to us right now. And here is why all of this is important. I wouldn't even be talking about this, except this is what I think is happening in our world today. I believe we've forgotten, as a global society, for the most part, we've forgotten what these changes mean to us because we weren't here 5,000 years ago. And we have, we've overlaid our own perceptions on the records of the past from those who were here 5,000 years ago. So for the most part, we don't understand these cycles as a civilization. But here's what I think is happening. I think the changes in our world are forcing individuals, communities, societies, and nations to work together now in a way that we haven't for a long time, because we need to get through the cycle. However, because they are short-lived, I think what is going to happen is that once the immediate challenge is gone and we're no longer faced with these crises, I think we're going to find that we're better people when we work together and we have a better world. And we'll keep working together even though we no longer need to. And in that way, we will have fulfilled the beauty, the flip side of the prophecies that the media specials don't talk about. And the flip side is that our indigenous ancestors told us, they said, if you work together to get through this little speed bump in the road of life, that's my language, if you work together to do this, you open the door to an extended period of peace and cooperation, maybe unprecedented. And in the religious traditions, this is interpreted as 1,000 years of peace. It's just on the other side of the dark times that come at the end of the cycle. But it's all up to us and how we deal with the changes. So I'm less concerned about the physical changes on the planet, because we've gotten through them in the past and our technology will help us deal better than our ancestors did. But that technology also can be our downfall if we use it to fight one another in our fear and to prop up unsustainable ways of life as we go through the changes. And that's the choice that we've got to make right now.
It's phenomenal to me to listen to all of the voices out there speaking pro and con on 2012 and seeing all of the various images regarding the same subject, but then also to take a look at the events that are happening right around us in present day, whether you take a look at the natural events that are happening, or you take a look at the what's the phrase? There's a word I want to use. When something begins to decay and spirals downward as opposed to spiraling upward and constructing, I can't even think of the word. But our economy, for example, is on a downward spiral of sorts. And yet, it's almost, as you've described, that's one of those systems that they're trying to keep going. But it's not sustainable.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things I think that we can learn. What it appears happens. Now, this is where if we number one, know that the cycles have happened in the past, then number two, if we know where to look in the past, it gives us a really good idea of what we can expect when they come around in the present and in the future. Number three, we've got a couple of different places we can look. We can look into the history of the Earth, as we've just described, over these vast periods of time through sediment cores in the oceans or ice cores from Antarctica and Greenland. And we can look into the archaeological record, the history of people and how people responded at the end of these cycles. And what researchers are finding, Richard, is that it's actually these world age cycles that drive the rise and fall of civilizations, and cycles of war and peace are very closely linked to the end of these world age cycles. So it appears that during, for example, we're now at the close of our 5,000-year cycle. So for the last 5,000 years, we have learned to put together systems on this planet that sustain and support us, systems of growing food, of exchanging things that we place value upon, of sharing technology, of transporting things that are important to us from one place to another, of powering and fueling civilizations all over the world. We put these systems together, and they seem to work reasonably well when everything is status quo. When the world begins to change, driven by these cycles, the systems are stressed. They're taxed. And the ones that are not sustainable are the ones that seem to buckle and collapse pretty quickly, and the ones that are sustainable seem to work pretty well and get us through the changes. So we look at where we are right now, and the best minds of our time are telling us that we are facing an unprecedented number and an unprecedented magnitude of challenges, all compressed into this little window of time. And they're also telling us we have to solve these within the next 5 to 8 years, by the way. The unsustainable ways of life are buckling under the stress of the change, and the choice we have to make is, do we spend our time and energy and resources propping up a way of life that's not sustainable in the long run, or can we look at those systems without judging them, say, yeah, you know, it may not be the best system in the world. It worked well enough for 5,000 years to get us where we are now, and now the world changed, and let's let that system go and embrace the new ones. We don't even have to build them. They're already out there. It's just about where we choose to place our focus and embrace the system. So those are generalities. So let's talk about specifics. The economic system that you just mentioned. An economic system that is based on ever-expanding markets, growing larger and larger and larger, where one person benefits only at someone else's loss. That is not sustainable in the long run. And I think that's part of the system that's collapsing right now. The energy that it takes to keep a planet going based on the burning of fossil fuels, a finite source of energy that destroys the very planet that we're trying to save. In the long run, that is not sustainable. Those systems worked to get us to the place where we are today, and now they're buckling under the pressure of a changing world. So the question is, do we fight to maintain and prop up an unsustainable way of life, or do we find new ways of providing those things for ourselves? And I don't know how we will ultimately respond, but these are the choices that we're making as individuals and as a nation and as a civilization right now.
Well, whatever decision we do make, we're going to have to make it together. It's up to all of us collectively, and we'll have to deal with the consequences. So maybe we should use that intuition or insight, what have you, and logic, and make the best decision we can for ourselves and our future generations. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. My guest is Greg Braden, and we're talking about fractal time and demystifying a lot of the myths that have been created through movies and television and other books and websites and so forth about what they think is going to happen. And I'll be honest with you, I am tending to lean more towards what Greg is saying. It's a little more hopeful in addition to that fact. Stay tuned. There's more to come here on Tell Me Your Story, the special edition.
If we leave here today, we could be 1,000 miles away. Take to that road, see how far it goes. And on that great ocean road, all the countries in our bones, all the trouble you know, empties out as you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me,
Tell me your story. New paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host and my guest on this very special edition of Tell Me Your Story. On my special day is Greg Braden. He's the author of Fractal Time, and we're working on demystifying some of the most amazing things that have been said about 2012, December 21st. And of course, as you heard, it's my anniversary, my 10-year anniversary. It's going to be very exciting for both my wife and I. Hopefully we are going to take a huge trip somewhere, hopefully Ireland. That's what we're shooting for. But nonetheless, it's incredible, the information. You're not going to hear this kind of stuff just anywhere. Tell Me Your Story is a program that is available to you on the internet. It's live streaming at richarddugan.com, and we also have the archives at richarddugan.com, and that is at the radio show's page. And Greg, this is some of the most incredible information I've ever heard.
Fascinating stuff, isn't it, Richard?
Oh, and again, we could literally go on for hours. And what I would love to continue discussing is this subject, and we'll have to do that at a later time. But before we go, before we wrap up the program, I'm going to give you about 5 to 7 minutes so you can give me a nice long answer. I've asked this question. I have never asked this question of you, but I've asked it of other guests over the course of the last three and a half years or so doing this program. You were a scientist. You were working in the Defense Department. You were doing all of this wonderful work. We'll put it in that category. And you yet could have also been doing all kinds of other things. Instead, here you are today. We're talking about Fractal Time. You've written the God Code. You've written the Divine Matrix, Spontaneous Healing of Belief, and other works as well. You've spoken all over the world. Why this? Why now?
Well, I see you saved the easy question for last.
Well, you know how that works.
Well, you know, it's first, when I'm asked that question, the way it often comes to me is, Greg, how did you make what is considered, many people see is the leap, considered to be the leap, the quantum leap between the world of science and high tech and technology to the world of ancient wisdom traditions and spiritual traditions? And I guess the first time I heard it, I was surprised for this reason, and I'll just share a little bit of a personal background. I was born and raised in a conservative community in northern Missouri. And although we didn't talk about this stuff outwardly, but I, as a child, I made assumptions. And one of my assumptions was that when we study science, that we're ultimately we're studying God. I always felt that when I studied geology, chemistry, biology, physics, those are just the little, you know, compartmentalizations of the way that a higher power in this universe works, and that ultimately it was helping me to understand that higher power. We just never gave a name to it, and nobody talked about it. And I believe that even until through college, when I was in the corporations around the coffee machine or a water machine in the morning, was the first time I found nothing could be further from the truth. That there was a belief that we had to choose spirituality or science, but that the two were mutually exclusive. And it was during my time working behind the scenes during the last years of the Cold War on the MX nuclear missile project. It was one of the most frightening times in the history of this planet for people that really knew what was happening behind the scenes, that I felt strongly, Richard, that we have been here for a very long time, longer than is traditionally acknowledged, and that somewhere in our past, we would have left for ourselves the key to transcending the differences that divide us as they do today and have led to the great wars of the 20th century, such as the Cold War. And that it was up to us to discover and recognize that key and bring it forward now when we need it the most at the close of this cycle. And in that way, there was great continuity between what I was doing in the defense industry during the day and what I was doing at night, researching the texts and then the journeys. My vacation time was, I needed a vacation when I got back from my vacation because the vacation, the 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it was, were very difficult journeys into these remote areas looking for that evidence, and that journey continues today. So each of the books, I've had people ask me, I said, why can't you just find a topic and stick with it? Well, I always follow the map on your, you know, well, are you the magnetics guy with the earth, or are you the prayer guy, yeah, or are you the monastery guy? And, you know, that's one way of looking at it. Every one of the books explores a different aspect of our relationship to ourselves, to one another, to this world, and to a higher power, however we perceive that power, and the application of that understanding to what's happening to our world and our families right now, to where we are in history. And in that way, while each book is different, they all contribute. It's my way of making a contribution to a deeper understanding of who we are and our relationship to the world, and hopefully a way that we can apply it so we don't make the mistakes of the past. So that's a long answer to your short question, but this is the path that for me it's felt like the right path. I had personal experiences along the way that have dotted the journey, my journey, with indications that I was on precisely the right path, and I can't imagine choosing anything else right now.
Well, we're certainly glad that you have chosen that path, because it's allowed us not only to get to know you, but also to understand, I think, at least for me, to better understand some of the things that are out there, both on this planet and out in the universe. And that's, again, the point of this program is to allow everybody who, well, I don't know about everybody, 6 billion people, it's going to take a long time to do that many shows, but to give you an opportunity as a point on the circle to express your viewpoint, your perspective on what's in the middle of the circle, i.e. life, big subject, granted, and each of us then gets to take a little bit of that and say, hey, you know, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way. And we then incorporate it, and it broadens. I mean, isn't that what we were told as kids? Go to the library, read a book, and broaden your horizons?
Absolutely.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, is broaden people's horizons. And you certainly do that every time you're on the program. And I really want to thank you for taking the time to share with us. We look forward to having you back on a regular basis. We'd actually like to have you back on the program once in every seasonal cycle, so 4 times a year if possible, to expound further on what you've found, what research has divulged, if you will. And maybe by the time we get together again, the Chinese or the, what was the other country that was planning?
India. India's on their way to the moon. Yeah.
You know, and that's fascinating when you think about it, because you have India, you have China, and right in the middle there is Tibet, the one thing that everybody's kind of squabbling over. And maybe through this process, we can learn that we need to coexist. And again, I thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you for being such a gracious host. You know, I'll just tie back to that last comment. If we find written records and hieroglyphs in those craters, it's going to be really interesting to see what language they're in that's already familiar to us. And that will plant the seeds for another program.
Oh, wow. I'm excited
about
that.
Thank you for all you do, Richard. God bless. Take good care. I want to thank all of your listeners for everything they do every day in their lives to make this a better world. We appreciate you tremendously.
Well, thank you again, Greg, for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program. And again, we look forward to having you back many times between now and December 21st, 2012. And we'll be saying that date an awful lot between now and then. It's funny, I remember when we first started doing programs like this, I said, I'm not going to talk too much about this. Let me tell you something. I'll have Greg Braden on to talk about anything, cooking creme brulee or 2012. It doesn't matter. I just enjoy talking to the gentleman. He's got some incredible insights and information and intuition, and I love talking to the man. He's just incredible. Well, I certainly hope you enjoyed today's program. We continue this program next Saturday and every Saturday at 3 p.m., but we're also going to talk with Greg Braden again this fall. We're going to have him back on hopefully in October and then again in December, right around the 21st of December, and we certainly hope that you'll join us then. And hope you'll join us every Saturday for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And if you'd like to support this work, I encourage you to go to the missions page at richarddugan.com and do what you can to help us out. We'd love to hear from you as well, even if you just drop us an email, please. I'd like to hear from you, hear what your ideas on some of the programs are, or ideas for some programs. Until next Saturday, I'm Richard Dugan, your host for Tell Me Your Story, every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, encouraging you to join us and encouraging you to continue to look at new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until then, love to all.